You got the trio. You got the trio.
Hey everybody, it's Tim Miller from The Bulwark. Hope you liked that little teaser there. We have the trio theme. I gotta tell you, you're really gonna have to stay to the end of this episode because the full trio theme, TGIF inspired, for all of you millennials out there. The lyricism, I'm not going to say who the writer was with the lyrics, but you know, it'll tickle you. I think it's because you're going to find yourself singing it. My daughter, she was singing it in the back of the car, which is a little inappropriate, but at least it wasn't an AI podcast talking to her. So we're themed, we're legit, we're bona fide now. It's the trio. I'm Tim Miller. That's Sam Stein. He's the managing editor of The Bulwark. And then, of course, our muse and our inspiration, Will Sommer, author of the False Flag newsletter. Guys, so good to be back with you. I do have to tell you, I'm pretty disappointed that I was on vacation and wasn't able to cover the story of the MAGA influencer who does the sweatpants and the vaginal lips, and she spreads her legs while talking on camera. She's got an only. It just feels like I missed some really good stuff there.
Hold on. Can you just sit in her pose for the entirety of this?
Now people can see it. I wear shorts on here.
Oh God! Oh,
hey, you don't want to see what's happening down there.
A million views.
All right, there we go. We want to start. Our friend Margie Taylor Greene, married. She's married. It's nothing I miss. Good for her. Happy for her. It was a Vegas wedding. Unclear if Elvis was the officiant or not. But she is moving on to her next endeavor. Let's watch.
Hi, everyone. This is Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I am excited to let you know I am now on Cameo. So if you have a special message for a friend or a loved one, I would love to deliver it for you, or any other message for anyone. How do you do it, you ask? You just click on the link and follow the instructions, and we'll be on our way.
That's thrilling. So are we going to get one for JVL or what?
No, I had an idea, though. Well, first of all, I think I know why she's doing this. If you saw the wedding pics, she immediately went to the casino afterwards in her wedding dress. I don't know what games she was playing, but she was clearly gambling, and maybe she lost too much money. But I have an idea. All right. So to the trio listeners and viewers out there, if we can get, what should the benchmark be? 500,000 views on YouTube and maybe 100 new subscribers, either on YouTube or Substack through this, we will buy a Cameo from MTG and we'll play it on the trio, the next trio recording. That is a promise, or at least as long as MTG allows us to do it, but we will endeavor for it.
And we would try to get her to say something a little salty.
Well, you know, she was a major early trio character because she figured in Laura Loomer's Arby's in the pants deposition. So, you know, it would kind of bring it full circle. She would have to weigh in on that.
That's great.
Why I forgot about that. Like the Arby's, we could have included Arby's Big Beef and Cheese in the lyrics of the
song. Oh, they don't know the fully lyrics yet. They don't know the fully
I know, but Arby's Big Beef and Cheese doesn't make it in there.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Will, where were you when we were brainstorming?
I messed it up. I know.
All right, I'm looking for pictures of Marjorie. I see Marjorie in her wedding dress. I don't see her at the craps table.
She hit the craps table, which is like, you know, she ate, you know, she it's giving mother. It's iconic, you know. People were saying, oh, it's trashy, but I think like for your second wedding after, you know, your alleged other affairs, you know, with the Street Fighter cosplay guy. Look, I mean, there's no illusions at this point about romance or whatever, even though I think she and Brian Glenn have a great thing going.
Looks like a really nice marriage.
People want authenticity. Okay. So look, there's nothing wrong with being trashy if you're just being yourself. Okay. Like, look, you want to throw some dice in your wedding dress after your Elvis marriage in Vegas? Fuck you. This is America, baby. All right.
I would have brought my wife to the sports book. Yeah. Seriously.
Sam would be the sports book, you know, gambling on Connecticut women's basketball.
Put it all on Gino.
DeGen gambling on weeknight triple A baseball. Laura Loomer's unhappy, though. Well, maybe she isn't unhappy. Maybe Laura Loomer's... Well, let's just fix that. That's wrong. Laura Loomer, though, she couldn't be happy for the new married Marjorie Taylor Greene. The beef, if you will, is continuing. We can put this on the screen. And her feedback was Next Stop Only Fans.
Oh, Laura.
Yes. Well, tying into the yoga pants lady. I mean, you know, this crew has... These two have a beef that goes back many years. And, you know, whether it's Laura claiming Milo Yiannopoulos was secretly, you know, living at Marjorie's house, or, you know, or Marjorie stopping Laura from getting hired on the Trump campaign, you know, they just got to bury the hatchet, I say. Hit the craps table.
Yeah.
Laura has a new also idea for herself. She's pitching herself for a new role. Do you know what it is, Sam? Have you seen this?
I have. She wants to be the DHS Secretary of the United States of America, which I'm worried that this might actually get manifested into existence. It wouldn't necessarily shock the conscience if Trump like bought into the idea. They don't like Mark Wayne Mullen all that much.
They call him Mark Wayne Muslim.
Oh, no. Do they?
Why? Oh, that's a big one.
Why?
Okay.
Well, because they think he's, you know, I actually don't think it's necessarily related to like some kind of, you know, sympathy with Muslims or something. But it's just like they call him Mark Wayne Muslim because, you know, they think he's weak on immigration.
Well, Laura is promising to round up and forcibly remove jihadist invaders from the country. She'll get the job done. Is that a thing that's do we have? Is there a big jihad invasion happening currently? I thought Donald Trump had secured the borders. We're only letting in white Afrikaners. Who's she? Anyway, that's Laura's plan for her time as DHS secretary. If she was going to join the cabinet, she would be a colleague of Sean Duffy, Department of Transportation.
Before we get to that.
Sure.
If she were, let's just play this out.
Okay.
And she's nominated.
Where would she be in the cabinet rankings?
No, not that. Well, that we could do that in a second. But I'm wondering what the floor is for the votes in the Senate. Let's say to get to the floor. Like, what do you think?
Well, they've got 53 senators right now, the Republicans. But Mitch McConnell is dead, maybe, or comaed. So that's 52. Going down the list here, Tommy Tuberville, Katie Britt. Any chance Katie Britt goes against her? No way. Murkowski, 51. Boozman, Cotton, no, they're going to be four, absolutely. Rick Scott, Ashley Moody, Krippa. We're just going to Reish. I mean, Todd Young, none of these. Jim Banks in the Senate? You guys realize Jim Banks is still in the Senate?
He was such
a firebrand back in the day. Now he's just a little Trump bitch boy. Chuck, yeah, this is tough. Roger Marshallson, boy. Bill Cassidy is the next one we get to. It's maybe a 50. Susan Collins, 49. I think the floor is like
46, something like that.
Higher.
Maybe 47.
Yeah, I think higher. 48. That's shocking. With Tillis.
Tillis wouldn't vote for her. Come on.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I've just marked him off. Well, Dave McCormick. Davos Dave McCormick.
Absolutely.
I
think he'd be for her.
What about Darlene Graham? Where do you think she'd land?
Darlene's going to do what Trump wants, man.
Well, she's very pro-Ukraine. Laura's very pro-Ukraine now, which I think could win her a couple senators.
Absolutely.
I think 46 is the floor for her.
Woo!
Confirmation.
I would take 40s. I would take the over. I give her 47, right. 48. That's rough. That's a rough assessment of the current state of affairs. All right.
Will is reporting on one of her future colleagues in the cabinet, Sean Duffy. You might remember from a past trio, the discussion of the Great American Road Trip. Sean Duffy was really excited to take his brood of children and introduce them to the reality show game that brought him to fame. And they used it was partially money from us, the taxpayers, but partially it was corrupt money from companies that Duffy's supposed to regulate. And they paid him to drive around the country and, you know, look at Mount Rushmore and, you know, whatever, play car games with the kids, take videos. And this was kind of going to be America 250 thing, I thought. They're going to be like kind of rolling this out. It was going to be fun content for Fox News Weekend. And nothing. We haven't seen anything from the road trip. Well, tell us what's happening.
Well, I've been waiting to plan my family road trip based on this. And, you know, it's like, obviously the summer's almost over. I'm sorry. I need to book a hotel or something, you know, if I'm going to do it. I mean, this is something I've been keeping an eye on.
Howard Johnson is going to have the best indoor pool.
I want the Duffy suite. It's crazy. I mean, I've been keeping an eye on this. And as you said, this is a situation where a huge amount of companies and trade associations that are regulated by the Department of Transportation, like Boeing, put $1 million into this thing, Toyota, United Airlines, all this stuff. To send this family of 11 on, you know, 7 months of amazing vacations. There's one shot in the trailer where they're all riding like luxury snowmobiles, like a convoy. I mean, it costs a lot of money. And so it was supposed to be, Duffy said it was going to come out in June. It was supposed to be pegged to America 250. There's a lot of, you know, you got to get out there and see see America this summer. But, you know, it's nowhere to be seen. And even, you know, a month ago, Politico asked about it and they said, it's coming soon. It's coming soon. We're putting the finishing touches on and it's still nowhere to be found.
You also mentioned the newsletter I noted was interesting is that Duffy got a little bit of trouble talking about the road trip because gas prices are spiking so much because of the stupid war in Iran that the president started and can't get out of. And so that does complicate kind of the messaging around the Great American Road Trip because they're not trying to bring a lot of focus into the gas price rise.
He was super into saying, and it kind of in like a hectoring tone, like he would say just like, you know, get off the internet. His wife was like, get out of Pornhub world, kind of weird way to talk, and you know, get on the road and you know, get your family together.
Some people can do Pornhub and road trips together. Yeah, and well, I don't think that those are mutually exclusive.
We can endeavors. Walk and chew gum, come on.
and they were saying, you know, fill up that car. There was a lot, as you said, there was a lot of talk about gas. And you know, this was coming, I think, like just a couple weeks after the war started, the Strait of Hormuz was closed. So I think maybe they delayed it for that reason. And they've just been waiting for Trump to end the war. But obviously that hasn't happened.
But they told you that it's not dead, because that was the real concern, was like, I was sort of like, they must have killed this thing, right? Because if I remember correctly, he pegged it to July 4th. But now they're like, well, it's just going to come out this year. We're celebrating 250 all year.
Well, he said it's going to come out in June, and it was very like focused on the summer and in a celebration of America to celebrate her 250, you know, as he put it. You know, it disappeared, you know, as you said. And you know, I think there's a couple things going on here. I mean, there were some Democratic senators who were like, wait, why is Boeing sending the Secretary of Transportation on vacation? That's a little weird. As you said, after the story was published, they came back to me and they said, well, you know, technically America 250 is like a whole year long thing. So we haven't missed it yet. Like maybe the road trip's in November, you know, who knows?
Did they specify if it was the calendar year or a year from when he announced?
They didn't make it clear, and I did email them back at your request, and I said, well, what's up with the delay? And they just didn't get back to me. I mean, another kind of weird thing here was people may remember that, like, one of those weird Trump speeches or at the Great American State Fair. Duffy spoke before that with his whole family, and I thought, okay, this is going to be about the road trip. We're going to hear about the road trip. And he told people to go on road trips a lot. But then he didn't mention the show. And this is like supposed to be the Department of Transportation listed the show as one of their key initiatives.
Something's happening here. This smells fishy. I feel like we're not getting the full story, honestly.
Me neither. We'll continue to sleuth. Rapid fire. Sam, best childhood road trip memory for you?
Oh, easy one. I went to Cooperstown with my dad and my fam, and it was awesome. I was super into baseball cards back then. I remember very vividly I liked the Mets back then. Now I love the Red Sox, but I remember very vividly getting a Mookie Wilson rookie card, and I was like so psyched. I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
Will.
Yeah, for me, I guess, you know, my mom's family was in Wisconsin. We were in Texas. So it was a lot of drives up and down there. My family would put on a lot of like Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand audiobooks, Fountainhead, and of course, a lot of Rush Limbaugh in between. And so that really, like, I would be doing the curves on the mountains or whatever, and I would just be, you know, inhaling that stuff. So for
this
me,
that's scans. This is the most.
That's good. Mookie Wilson,
then I came back to school after the summer, like completely demented. They were just like, you can't act like the Fountainhead, Will.
This wasn't my pick, Sam, but since you have a Mookie Wilson memory, one of our childhood family road trips was to the beach in Alabama. That's how fancy we were. We went to Dauphin Island. I forced my parents to stop by Bo Jackson's childhood home so that I could see that on the drive down. I felt cool about that. But the one I was going to do, just to stereotype, was I forget why. For some reason, my mother and I did a road trip together where it was just us. So it was the girl and the gay. And we were going from St. Louis to Colorado. And you don't turn. It's just one highway, Highway 70 from St. Louis all the way up to the mountains where we're going. Our aunt has a place in the mountains in Colorado. And somehow we got totally lost and ended up in Oklahoma. Like totally the wrong state.
Okay.
But that's, it was nice. It's still a fun memory. You know, it's like you're upset for a while, but then you kind of embrace the crisis.
I'm in Oklahoma.
Yeah, we ended up in Oklahoma. It's kind of okay. Oklahoma. You know, started singing it and you kind of just pull it together. It's just you and your mother. It's nice. Nice memory.
This message is sponsored by ZocDoc. So if you're anything like me, going to the doctor is one of those things that's incredibly easy to put off and then put off again. And then when you're just really busy with work and parenting and all that stuff, you put it off one more time. You'll tell yourself you can call tomorrow. And then tomorrow turns into next week. By the time you finally pick up the phone, the first available appointment is months away. It's one of those annoying tasks that somehow always falls to the very bottom of the list. That's one reason I'm glad that today's video is sponsored by ZocDoc. I don't want you dealing with the same frustration when it comes to your health. Instead of spending time calling office after office after office, or just wondering who's actually covered by your insurance, ZocDoc makes the whole process much easier. ZocDoc lets you search and compare local and in-network doctors. You can see actual appointment openings and instantly book a visit online. And appointments often happen within a 24 to 72 hour window with some same day availability. Everyone who has ever tried to book a doctor knows that is downright impossible sometimes and incredibly frustrating to have to wait so long to go see a doctor. On top of that, ZocDoc is completely free to use. Your health matters and taking care of yourself shouldn't be complicated. Find and book the right doctor with ZocDoc. Head to ZocDoc.com/bulwarktakes to get started and check the appointment off your to-do list. That's ZocDoc.com/bulwarktakes.
What else did we have here?
Oh, the sauerkraut and steak diet.
You want to go to that? Okay, that's great.
Well, it's another Sean Duffy thing.
Is it? Is Sean Duffy doing that? Why don't you guys explain the sauerkraut and steak diet to me?
Sure. So the New York Times has a great article out about this sort of MAHA themed diet. A lot of cabinet officials are on, like J.D. Vance, Duffy, RFK Jr., I think.
J.D. Vance, who was fat shaming Mark Thiessen this morning on social media. It's yes. Like, oh, congrats. It's like, it's just like the Catholic thing. It's like you become Catholic for 2 minutes and now you're lecturing the Pope, and you stop being a fat body for 2 minutes and now you start lecturing people on their fucking eating.
He's like, belly JD. Up to the burrito bar, yeah, big boy. It's like,
JD, okay. Wait, the weirdest part, you gotta go to confession for a year and you gotta stay thin for a year before you can start, you know, nitpicking others.
Was that the weirdest part of the JD? I thought the weirdest part of the tweet was that he made this big spectacle that he'd given up Twitter for Lent or something like that. And he was like, I'm detoxing from social media. But he, like, he relapsed just for this one moment.
Just to call Mark Thiessen
a fatty. Come on, man.
Anyway, so he's gotten thin on this diet, steak and sauerkraut. What prompted? Like, yeah, give me a little more.
This guy at the Times tries the diet, but it's an interesting diet.
Why the diet? Like, why are they on this diet?
Well,
it's supposed to be great for you. It's supposed to be like, it just helps your innards.
Steak
like you
lose and sauerkraut?
Weight. Well, yeah, let me, so it's truly bizarre. So it's steak. It's any animal that eats grass. And so it can also be like elk or bison or deer, and cows, obviously. And then you have a lot of fermented things. It's all based around the gut biome. And so you know, kimchi, yogurt, all these things. And so the guy who is kind of the prophet of this movement, he says he keeps 20 ferments, so he keeps various kind of fermenting delicacies in his fridge, and then he'll make a big tomahawk steak, and then he kind of goes around and does like a dab of each ferment, and then he kind of, you know, goes to town.
So the New York Times, we will say, to be fair, because we're nothing if not fair at the trio, this fellow Will Staley at the Times said that he did feel gut healthy with the ferment and steak diet. So take that for what it's worth if you want to consider that. But the reporting got a little weird in parts.
All right. So he calls up this doctor who is explaining this diet to him. And this doctor, who is like 65 or something, says it's amazing. He loves it. And they start talking about the Bristol stool chart, which I'm sure you guys have hanging in your bathroom like me. It measures your poop by softness and wateriness. Okay.
A little concerned about that. What, okay. Softness and wateriness seem to be on the same side. Shouldn't it be hardness to wateriness?
Type one on the Bristol stool chart is separate hard pellets. Type seven is watery, no solid pieces. This doctor says he's consistent.
we call that ass pissing in Louisiana. This type seven.
Okay. I'll have to ask Bristol to rename it. This doctor says he's consistently delivering type four, which is smooth, soft, like a snake. That's his quote. Okay. I'm going to get through this.
Is that what we're going? Is that the ideal?
This, he describes the deal like this, okay? And this is what he says is happening to him, okay? Quote, and this is
I think it's important for you to understand whether picturing type four, smooth, soft, like a snake. Pointed ends.
That's, yeah. And I think that's his ideal. To each their own, okay? Okay. Here's the quote. When you start eating healthy, you don't need toilet paper, the doctor claimed. Animals in the wild have no residual stool on their anus. Omara, who's the doctor, described a proper bowel movement to me this way. Odorless, wipe-free, over in 3 to 7 seconds, and quote, nearly orgasmic. Okay, here's the best part.
He's the bottom.
He adds, I could have a bowel movement behind a sheet at a dinner party in the corner of the room and nobody would know. Okay. Well, I just feel like he's done it. And he knows. Very specific metaphor.
I've been ruminating on that sentence a little bit. And it's like, would not people know, how could you subtly be behind a sheet in the corner?
Dr. America. Oh, like, there he is, behind the sheet. He's shitting.
Why is he behind the sheet in the corner of the room? And it would have been impressive, you know, if he said that, hey, at a dinner party, I could just slide off the side of the chair and just like kind of knock it out real quick into a bowl and nobody would notice.
How many seconds? Yeah, he says it's only 3 to 7 seconds. That's pretty quick. The question I have is, though, the orgasm that
nearly
happens
orgasmic.
At the end. Yeah, does he make a sound because he's orgasming from his poop? And do people hear him from behind the sheet? Like, wouldn't that give away the game? A lot of questions on this.
It is interesting to think that these cabinet officials are listening to this guy and they're like, all right, I'm in.
That's what I want.
The vice president's like, I'm interested in the nearly orgasmic poops.
The orgasmic dinner party poop.
How nearly are we getting? You know.
Well, that's a good question, and I've actually assigned Andrew Egger to find out if this is dumb. Actually, can I tell a funny story? Because this is like my ideal style of journalism. I have a very soft spot for doing food challenges. Will can attest to this. I've assigned a couple of them. I made Jared do that $3 meal challenge. Back in the Daily Beast days, Corey Lewandowski wrote his book on his time with Trump, and in one of the chapters, he mentioned Trump's diet and what Trump eats over the course of a day, and it was like really grotesque, right? It was like something like he has steak and eggs for breakfast, and then he's got a lot of chips for snacks, and then for lunch he's got like two Big Macs with, fries, and he's got Diet Cokes, and then he's got cookies for snacks. And then
16 Diet Cokes a day.
Yeah, and then for dinner, he's got like a overdone steak, tons of ketchup, potatoes. So he was very specific and detailed with this. So I looked at that and I said, what would that be like if you actually did it? And so we had a reporter at the time, Gideon Resnick, and I'm sorry if I'm throwing him under the bus here, but whatever. And I told Gideon, I said, Gideon, I want you to eat like Trump for a week. Just follow that diet. And we got to the point where we outlined every one of Gideon's meals, down to the fact that Gideon couldn't drink coffee because Trump doesn't drink coffee. And Gideon was really upset about that. And Gideon was like, okay, I'll do it. And then he got a little bit cold feet. And I was like, look, for the story, just email like a nutritionist at a university and see what it's like, see what they would say about this. So he emailed a nutritionist at Columbia and he sent the outline of the diet to the nutritionist, like down to the meal each day over the course of the week. And I kid you not, the nutritionist wrote back. She was like, "Do you have a history of heart disease in your family?" And he's like, "No, why?" She's like, "Because I would not advise this." And so then Gideon was really spooked. And he was like, "I'm not doing this." I was like, "What about 3 days, not 7 days?" He's like, "Okay." And then it got close. He's like, "Look, I can't do this. I cannot do this." So then I tried to get Swin to do it, and he wouldn't do it either. And we just never did the story.
You didn't do it yourself?
No, I'm the editor.
Where is the leadership? You know, a true leader the leadership gets into is the field.
The leadership is coming up with the story and assigning it.
You get into the field with the troops. You get down into the muck. You drink the 16 Diet Cokes a day yourself. You know who else likes tomahawk steak? Fascists throughout history, like Bolivian. Bolivian dictator. What was the Bolivian dictator's name, Will?
Oh, don't we all know him? I mean, that's kind of a cute. Yeah, Hugo Banzer.
Hugo Banzer. Hugo Banzer is maybe a model. Do you guys know? Do you think the audience knows Steven Crowder? Have we covered Steven Crowder before?
We have, but not that much, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he was the guy that goes to the campuses with the signs. They'll say, like, an offensive thing, prove me wrong. He sells like God hates fat figs shirt, but it's crossed out. It's really clever. It's like I don't see figs.
Yelled at his pregnant wife.
What did he do famously. With his pregnant wife? Hit her?
He yelled at her, and then she left him, and you know, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, that was a whole thing. I've always thought he is little, but one man's opinion. Anyway, he did a video a week ago about how we need fascism.
Oh, great.
Pull that up. Not subtle. It's literally called right here, The Case for Fascism. He writes this, from Pinochet's Chile to Franco's Spain, from Brazil's 64 coup to Bolivia's Hugo Banzer, each time a so-called fascist takeover followed the same pattern. A far-left government wrecking the economy through nationalization until someone stepped in to clean up the mess. Ha-ha! The results speak for themselves. Soaring GDP growth, plummeting inflation and poverty. Let's play a clip.
They go fascist because, I'm not going to lie, there were some journalists on those helicopters.
Yes.
But you have to understand, those journalists were doing the bidding of communists. So what? I'm not saying that this is right. But when you have this unbelievable economy where even international economists are actually studying your country, the Chilean experiment, and you're reading your own publications, and every single one of them who supported the Marxist government before you is saying that inflation is, they're lying. You go, oh my gosh, okay, I know what they're doing. They're trying to foment rage so that I'm the next guy taken out. And so you put them on a helicopter ride. Doesn't mean that it's right. But outside of that, if you were running your own business, you were better off under Pinochet. If you were creating a product, you were better off. If you were engaging in trade with other nations and you wanted to be able, you were better off than you were under the Marxists, assuming the violence is equal.
So, yeah, so I spent an unpleasant 22 minutes with this. It's interesting. So essentially the argument he's making is he's like, people are always calling Republicans fascist, but you shouldn't really care because a lot of times fascists make a lot of good points and they're great at saving economies. But weirdly, he leaves out, okay, he talks about Franco and Pinochet, pretty famous fascist leaders, but he leaves out like Hitler, Mussolini, any of those interwar European dictators. And so you end up with people who aren't like necessarily even fascist. They were like military dictators, like Hugo Banzer. And it's kind of a funny thing. He keeps saying, like, here's what they told you so many lies about Hugo Banzer. And it's like, who, what? And so he's making all these
also
weird
Pinochet,
claims.
Pinochet, not great. I just don't want to like cost, you know, kind of gloss over that. I mean, he had the caravan of death.
He disappeared a lot of people. What are we talking about?
And so Stephen grapples with this. We're basically, he's arguing, he's just like, well, you know, inflation was really high under Allende. So like they kind of had to do what they had to do. And then when he says, look, we're a couple people thrown out of helicopters. We're a lot of people thrown out of helicopters. Yeah. You know, I mean, even then he kind of does this whole thing about like fascists aren't so violent. And then he goes, all right, in terms of the violence you've heard of, whatever.
God.
There's something refreshing about just saying it, right, Sam? You
know, it's no, like I disagree with that.
No,
I don't
nothing
think it's
refreshing about them just being like, we want fascism. Because they do. They want it. And Steve, and you don't have to hand it to Steven Crowder, but
I don't know. Think they
Jesse
want
Waters
it.
And Greg Gutfeld want fascism too. And they're just too big of wussy boys to say it.
Maybe, but I'm not sure they want it. I think they want to like poke the bear and be provocative, just like what he does on college campuses. They know that people are going to be like, oh, look at these guys. And then they get, you know, engagement and clicks and shit like that. So I'm going to choose to believe that they're just being provocative and idiotic.
They want fascism.
Fascism is very hot right now on the right, to Tim's point. Jack Posobiec has started holding a weekly live stream called Franco Friday, often featuring, you know, far right Spanish commentators. So, you know, it's taking off, especially among Catholics. I hate to say it.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Franco was popular in kind of now we're going way back into the kind of early days of the National Review world. But, you know, Brent Bozell.
What's the case for Franco?
Well, they love Franco because he was very specifically like a Catholic, like theocratic fascist. And I mean, they, you know, Jack Posobiec was just saying he doesn't consider himself a capitalist anymore. So that's really kind of what they're after.
Yeah. But I mean, Brent Bozell, you know, there was like Buckley kind of liked Franco. We're going to give the shorthand of this. Josh Tate is going to be really upset at me for like not getting this exactly right. But the gist of it was like Buckley was like kind of like, oh, I like what Franco's doing a little bit here, but I also, you know, like freedoms. And Bozell, you know, whose son ends up being L. Brent Bozell, who runs, you know, a media watchdog group, and then whose son after that was a January 6th insurrectionist that got arrested. So it's kind of a, you know, trajectory there, the Bozell family. Bozell's like, you know, Buckley, I think you're getting a little soft. And, and I'm like putting on the Franco uniform and I'm going to live in Spain for a while. And like, we're going full fat. So like this strain has been there for a while. Josh Tate, please correct me if that history isn't quite right. It's been a minute since I read my Buckley history. The final topic, we're doing something out of character for the trio. We're going to feature a weird thing that happened with a Democratic candidate. Because again, we're nothing if not fair. Okay? We're nothing if not fair. 61-year-old man asked Kirill Basin, who's a Democratic candidate running for Congress in Hawaii, running against the incumbent Democrat Jill Takuda. Basin was asked to turn down the volume on the music he was playing. And he responded by implying he had a gun and would shoot his wife, sparking a physical altercation. This fight is on video, and we have it for you.
Fuck you! Hey.
Not my girl.
Fuck you!
Not my girl.
That guy's the candidate.
And they were telling him to turn his music down, and keep in mind how loud that music is.
Go ahead. Go.
I didn't fucking put him in the ground.
Let's go, bro.
Go ahead.
I'm good. Let him
Mike. All right,
good. It's over.
Look at that swimsuit.
So Kirill
has a chair. Boom. Oh, he knocked out. Knocked out.
I love Pink Floyd just blasting in the background here.
Wake up. Yeah. What you fucking about, Holly Boy? Yeah?
Kirill doesn't want to give up.
I don't think he's going to win the primary. It's hard to get into this.
You got
to
get the right chair.
I'll say this about this woman. The groins. It's good for the groins.
Sitting like that? Yeah.
What'd you make of that video, Sam?
Well, I loved, like I said, I think Pink Floyd, We Don't Need No Education, blasting in the background is a really nice touch. I don't know if that was really playing, but if they dubbed it, that's awesome.
I think that was ambiently in there, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. This guy, I don't think is going to win office. Just going to go out on a limb. Doesn't seem like the type of video you want surfacing while you're trying to unseat an incumbent. I'm not really sure what he was thinking. Also, the chair throwing is not a good touch. You know, like, if you're going to do it, like, don't pick up your lawn chair.
Yeah, so supposedly what was happening there was that the guy who fights him at the end was like a bystander, and Kirill at one point allegedly had a knife out and he was waving it around, and then he later, I guess, to hide the evidence, he went and threw it in the ocean kind of amid this fight, like a lot of back and forth. And then this guy was like, look, at the point where you're threatening to kill this like nearly elderly guy, I may have to just punch you out. And, you know, and that's the, but, you know, Kirill, he's an interesting figure. I did a little research into him. I don't think he was that serious of a candidate to begin with. His website says he would refuse super PAC money, spelled P-A-C-K. I just don't think he was going to make it to Congress.
Well, I don't know. Democratic voters are looking for anti-establishment candidates who are fighters. And so point. Maybe he'll surprise in that primary. We'll keep an eye on it. Everybody, trying to get back up into this position. It's really challenging for her. This is nice. We'll have to find a better way to do this.
One more thing to note about Kirill is he's also an aspiring stand-up comedian, and he's posted a lot of this stuff on YouTube of his comedy. And now the commenters who are aware of this fight have found him, and they're saying, you know, how can you be a stand-up when you keep getting knocked down? Stuff like that.
We'll leave it there. Good. Subscribe to the feed. Get us to 500,000 so we can get JBL and MTG cameo. We are going to take you out with the new theme song. Tell us what you think about it in the comments. Enjoy it. That's Sam Stein and Will Sommer. We'll see y'all soon.
When there's hanky-panky at TPUSA, Groypa's Cryptus Jessica's Mar-a-Lago horseplay. You got the trio. You got the trio. Cat's a singing girlfriend and the gay MAGA crews. A bear tell your caucus left in Central Park too. You got the tree.